Hi there, Brendan.
Greetings, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast 147 being brought to you live. Yeah, we're live. We don't do like weird recordings of it or something. That'd be really weird, actually, if we did some kind of like one of us recorded and then the other kind of recorded in response or something. That would
Like
sound.
letters back and forth.
Yeah. Like we'd build the whole show over the course of the week in like 15-second chunks or something.
This is the lake house of podcasts.
Not a thing, anyway.
No. I've never even seen that movie, but I know the mechanism of it.
The letters in the mailbox and
Yeah.
does
Why
that
do I
make
know that? Why do I know? This is the internet. This is the problem with the internet. Why do I know that? I've never even seen that fucking movie.
I haven't seen it either. I don't know. But does that make me
Why would
Keanu
we both know?
Reeves or Sandra Bullock?
See, I didn't know who was in it, so
Oh,
that's good. I can't tell you, but if I get to be Ke no, like, yeah, I'll be Keanu.
they both in that? Am I doing that? Maybe.
Wait, what's the one with Richard Gere?
Oh.
Don't know. I don't even know. Don't answer that.
All right.
I don't want to know if you know. I just remembered it. I'm not going to say it. Another movie I have not seen.
Let's skip it. Let's skip it. We'll keep going here. We'll keep going. So much stuff has happened in the past. Oh, I almost did it. 24 times 7 is
It's all you, man. It's
Four
all
hundred
you.
sixty-eight hours. 168 hours. Because we recorded last Thursday, right? Wasn't that right?
Which was a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah. We
Because this is a Thursday.
haven't been recording on Tuesdays in a little while. It's fine. It's fine. It's still good. I mean, the show's still good. Do you enjoy the extra couple days to gather more stuff for the show?
I like to gather my thoughts. I don't know. Listeners, do you notice a difference between episodes recorded on Tuesdays or Thursdays?
Oh,
I
man.
don't know.
Yeah, let us
T
know.
tweet us your answers, or don't. Or don't is always an option.
It tends to be the more common
The
option.
majority. Yeah, the majority option. Or don't.
Or don't, which is what it looks like, hopefully, Congress ends up doing with crypto. There's a movement right now because in I believe it's the UK. They are heavily considering banning strong cryptography altogether, or banning it in such a way that you have to provide a backdoor, or you have to provide some way of recovering people's keys, if in the event of in their they're saying it's for, crime or national security prevention, national security, blah, 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 in the UK anyway. And it seems to be gaining traction in their bodies of government, but they're only starting to take this up in the US. And I believe it was yesterday that some industry folks and some security folks had a hearing at a special session of a Congress committee, and they were talking about cryptography and how it works and how it doesn't, and what's the things that you can and can't do with it. And there's some interesting takeaways about what the general kind of understanding of cryptography is in Congress, and what
Seems to
it.
be zero.
Yeah. So that's the big takeaway. We're going to link to an article from I believe it's the Electronic Frontier Foundation about the other takeaways that come from it. But it really boils down to it's not something that they understand. And I think it's not something that a lot of people understand. I mean, it's really a difficult kind of subject to grasp because they start talking in big math and prime numbers and stuff like that. But really what it what they're talking about is the public-private key encryption, which is what a lot of, maybe not a lot, a bunch of people at least have hopefully heard of, if you've heard of PGP or GPG, the open source version of it. And one of the things related to that is that it's they're called keys, right? So the assumption is if you can have keys, then you can, you know, you can pick the lock in the key. It's just like a physical lock. And I think the interesting thing about strong encryption is that it's not a good analogy to call it a key in that way. You can't just hammer at it for it to work in like human scale time. I think it was something like if your key is more than like 1,000 bits long, which is like the minimum you can make a key nowadays, it's still estimated at like full computing power. You're talking like, you know, like 10,000 years of brute force password attempts to make that work. So, you know, I think the takeaway again is that it's not a well understood subject, but it's really interesting the ways that is taken, right? So some people in Congress say that well, maybe it's just a matter of time before computers get strong enough to crack these things, and maybe it is, but in the meantime, it doesn't mean that you should neuter strong cryptography, because the other side of breaking cryptography or making it illegal is that it doesn't stop people from using it. it just makes it illegal, and it's the whole, you know, if you ban cryptography or if you make cryptography illegal, only criminals will have cryptography, you know. So
which is the whole point. They're trying to prevent that, right?
Right. So I mean, the thing about cryptography, the other thing that I thought was interesting that came out of it is that one possible solution was that don't give government the keys to these or the back doors to these systems. Let the companies keep them, the companies that do it. So like if Facebook were to have a backdoor into your mail, which is supposedly secured, let Facebook have the keys to do it. But what came out of a lot of the discussions were that the companies don't want that key either, because that means that there's, if a key exists, if a way to break into the system exists, then there are, you know, security flaws. It's that big of a deal. If someone can break into it, then multiple someones can break into it, because that's how it works out. And also, the companies don't necessarily want the burden of maintaining that backdoor, and the assumption, or they don't want to be seen as people who potentially could snoop on their own customers, which I think is magnanimous of them, whether they actually would do that or not. I feel like enough companies probably do snoop on their own customers as part of their regular terms of service. But in any case, I think it's generally a good thing that there were people that knew what they're doing and are talking about cryptography intelligently. I'm still, and I've said this in the past, I'm still looking for an easier way to do cryptography. It's just not easy. I feel like we'd played with I'd played with that cryptography package, and it's bad. I actually cannot remember the name of it right now. It was like
it's that good.
Keybase.io. And they would keep the keys It was just a method for exchanging keys, because that's one of the harder things. First of all, you have to know how to make a key. And second of all, you have to know how to exchange them with people that you want to email securely. The downside to all of this, of course, is that not a lot of people are doing that email thing anymore.
I think the interesting argument that they're making that's terrible, that the government is making, is that this is all for the sake of protection.
Yeah.
But when they were asked how many instances have they encountered cryptography that stopped them from doing what they needed to do, they don't have any data on that.
Yeah.
The limited data that they do have, it's like they found 74 locked phones.
Yeah, that was an interesting
stat. Out of 100,000 cases.
Right.
Like, that's not – I don't think that's enough to justify weakening the security like that.
Right. All right. It was 100,000 cases that involved like phones or computers or whatever, and 74 of them – there were phones that were locked that they could not unlock. And so that counts as some amount of encryption and cryptography. And I think, you know, that's like such a base level of cryptography. I mean, we're not even talking about, I mean, that's still secured at least on an iPhone with a four digit code, which is not super difficult to break. Although, I mean, I think the upside to Apple's kind of system is that they don't there's a limit to the amount of times you can do it before it blows the phone up, essentially. So at least there's that. But so you can't try an unlimited number, but it's still, you know, it's still like a small data set. I know that they're moving to 6-digit pins, or they want to, for iOS 9. I'm gonna find that sort of annoying, but
I think I'm still using 7.
Oh, good for you. But it's still you know, it's still moving in a good direction. I would like a non like numeric password thing. You know, like I think I know Bank of America played with it for a little while, that you had to pick your like a photo or a picture that was your key, and then you had to it would send you a picture or whatever. It would show this group of pictures, and you had to pick the one that was your password. So that means there's no you don't ever type a number or a letter or anything, so there's no way that it can be key logged, and the pictures are kind of distributed and they're just drawn, so you can't, like, you would have to be screen capturing things and mouse coordinates and whatever in order to figure that out. They ended up dropping it and changing it back to like a regular password scheme, but I thought that was an interesting way to do it, because the other side of it is that kind of, if you have a keyboard, then you could potentially be grabbing keystrokes or things like that.
They do still have it's like a secondary authentication function where when you log on to their site, you have pre-selected a picture and a passphrase,
uh-huh,
so that when you, before you put your password in, you know you're on their actual site.
Yeah.
Which I like that.
Yeah. I think two-factor authentication is really really a better way to do things. If you're going to use like a simple PIN, I'm fine with two-factor authentication, because I mean it's just one more thing to have. And usually the ones I've seen have been like the second factor is your phone, because who doesn't have their phone anymore? I mean, the problem arises if you lose your phone, then how do you deal with things? But
then you've got a bigger problem. You don't have your phone.
Yeah. That's its own set of problems. But cryptography is a thing, hopefully, and hopefully the government lines up with that and realizes that strong cryptography is actually good. It's not just you know, something that we want to use, but it's something that the government should probably use if they don't already, in order to kind of secure things. It's pretty strong, so they should use it, and so should we. Hopefully someone will pull together a better package for that. I think the closest thing to that is, I think it was, I mean, we had talked about like the Dark Mail initiative and how they needed a new name. But there, I don't remember if we talked about Open Whisper Signal. It's a chat app that does end-to-end encryption, and there are keys that are chosen. They're randomized, but chosen by the device at the time, and you can verify them if you and the person you're texting with are it's a texting app. So if you and the person are texting with are next to each other, you can pull up the key screen and verify each other's encryption keys, and then from that point on, it just uses that that encryption for texting, and it works. I believe it works. They have an iOS client and an Android client, and I think it now even will encrypt voice calls. It makes them as data calls, which is pretty cool. I've been looking into it. I haven't gotten the number one person I want to text and call into it, aka friend of the podcast, Julie. So so if she's not on board with it yet, then I'm unfortunately not on board with it. We need a way to pull that together, though. I think it's
I need more secret things to talk about, apparently.
Well, it's the point of secrecy is that everything should be, right? If it's yours, then it should be yours. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have stuff to hide. It just means you have a reasonable expectation and understanding of privacy embedded into that. But I don't know. We'll get there, hopefully. And hopefully the government won't get in the way of that. But I learned about that on, let's see, where did I see that? I saw that on Reddit, which had kind of a meltdown this last weekend, for just before the 4th of July weekend. It was actually when we were on the air, because you had mentioned that the when we were looking for topics, we will normally scour like different parts of the internet, and one of the things we would look at is the science subreddit /r/science, and you had mentioned that it was down, and I'm like, oh, well, that's funny. And so after the show, when we looked at it, or I looked at it, and it was like, oh wow, not only that's down, a bunch of things are down, and what's going on? They're all made private. It wasn't down, they were actually made private. And what had happened was, at Reddit, they had fired Victoria, who, if you are a member or if you'd looked at any of the or the AMA subreddit, you would she was like the liaison. She was a Reddit employee that kind of facilitated those things. So celebrities or notable people or professionals could lean on someone at Reddit to help them do the Ask Me Anything system, where everyone is just asking questions and, you know, facilitating that kind of, you know, if they weren't necessarily familiar with Reddit or how comments show up or things like that, just essentially make that process smoother. And apparently she did a bunch of other moderator liaison things as well, because Reddit is a community moderated site. And so a lot of the mods, after they found out that she was let go, made their subreddits private in protest. And it was kind of a big deal all weekend, I would say, because I think they did lift the subreddit blackout within, it may have been 24 hours, for most of the most of the things. It may have been just a little bit longer because I don't think it went through the 4th of July weekend, but I think still stuff was still down on Friday for sure and into Saturday. But
I was back up over the weekend.
Yeah, but in any case, I thought it was interesting. I mean, it exposed a lot of problems. I believe the CEO of Reddit took the brunt of a lot of the backlash because I think, well, Victoria is seen as essentially a force for good and someone who talked to the users. She fights for the users. Well done. This is why we have a podcast.
Yeah.
But a lot of the folks on you know that participate in Reddit were like, wow, that seems like a bad idea to let her go. And you know, they can't legally, you know, say why she was let go or whatever, but
I guess they can. I think so.
I think she could say, but I'm not sure if they could confirm it because it's like I think in certain states it's like an HR thing. You have to.
Oh, that's true.
There might be you know repercussions for that. But in any case, I think the suddenness of it, even if there was a valid reason, which there may have been. Even with that, there seemed to be little or no communication regarding how to move forward and how to kind of process things. And it just, you know, it showed there were a lot of breakdowns, in communication. And then there was a lot of, drama that was associated with it as with a lot of things on the internet. Some people thrive on drama. There is a subreddit, not surprisingly, called Subreddit Drama, where that's where I first found the links about like what's going on and why are things down, and that whole subreddit, I actually can't have it as one of my subscribed subreddits because I don't want to see that content. it's just like people taking things way out of context and everything. And so it was this very reactionary kind of side of Reddit, which I know exists because
some might say it's the main side.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really, I think that is like a pretty big contingent of it, or it's a pretty big component of the people that post. And then, it's easy to bandwagon on something like that, because it's interesting. It's like, yeah, I'll add my upvote, which, you know, to something that I think is kind of interesting or funny. When it comes to actually like being, you know, posting about it, that's a little different. But there were a lot of posts that came out of it. Again, mostly casting the CEO Ellen Pao in like a very, I would say, negative light.
she has some pretty not nice nicknames.
Yeah.
The Hitler swaps going on Wikipedia were repeated.
Yeah.
I did think it was interesting that she didn't post on her own site about what was going on, but was responding to traditional media sources.
Yeah. She had posted,
about
I think
what was going on.
Time Magazine, like or Wired. I forget what the thing
was. It was some magazine.
Yeah. And then she eventually did make a post in Reddit, but I think it was Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a while after it had kind of started to blow over.
Yeah. And by that point, a lot of the ire had kind of died down. I don't know.
It's an interesting dynamic for a company that, you know, is ideally trying to generate revenue.
Yeah.
But they're so dependent on what's mostly a volunteer workforce.
Right. Right. There was a really interesting article about because, you know, it really is wholly based on people willing to post stuff and their their feelings of freedom to do so. You have to kind of, there, the article kind of said that you have to have like, you have to have free speech, or you have to, a lot of people thrive on that understanding of free speech, but it isn't free. It's not, because it has to generate revenue at the end of the day. And so it can't ever be like a completely open and free platform, because companies that want to run ads probably don't want to be associated with 100% free speech, especially if the ads are like, hey, don't use this company that is sponsoring this thing. You know, that's the there's a weird line to walk with that too, and a lot of that kind of came out in the discussions. If you could sort through all of the, you know, pictures of Ellen Pao like grafted onto, you know, various animals or whatnot, there was some discussion about like how they could fix it and how they could do things in different ways. And one thing that I'd read was related to how to create Reddit in a different, or host it in a different way. And this was an idea to make it completely decentralized. So to not have servers in the traditional sense of Reddit is hosted on a bunch of machines somewhere. Instead to have the content coordinated by maybe some central servers or some group of servers, but the actual hosting would be on the devices that browsed Reddit. So if you browse Reddit, your computer could be enlisted in hosting certain parts of Reddit posts, and that would decentralize it, which means that it would be harder to take it down, and it would also potentially mean that more because it's spread over you can't take it down because it's spread over multiple machines, but it also is protected from being like taken down by any other entities because it was deemed offensive or deemed, you know, illegal or something like that, which means that it would really turn it into a completely public and common space. I think
if you outlaw Reddit, only outlaws will have Reddit.
Well, I think that was an interesting idea. I think it was shelved because they, you know, they realized that they probably don't want it to be a 100% public space.
Oh yeah, we want to make money.
Right. So that's an interesting kind of case too. And the honestly, when it comes down to it, Reddit replaced Dig for a lot of people. Not me, oddly enough. I actually was a Slashdot person.
I was going to say, you're still using Dig?
When I moved over to Reddit, it was like, yeah, this is right, and I like the voting algorithm and everything else. And I know people are there were some people that were pushing towards some Reddit alternatives, and I don't think any of them are necessarily better. They're just, there was even one that seems like it's like a code copy of Reddit. I don't know if they're actually using
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that like got crashed because All the Reddit users were jumping over there.
Yeah.
Like, we need to upgrade our servers.
Yeah. And supposedly they got like an influx of capital and then cloud hosted their servers so it wouldn't be so susceptible to load. But it looks just like Reddit. I mean, the style sheet is different, but they have up votes and down votes, and they have kind of anyone can create. They call them subverses instead of subreddits, and
it's like the generic brand Reddit.
Yeah. I mean, I think if something's going to tear people away from Reddit, it's not going to be this. I think people are already back. Honestly, I think it will create some some kind of animosity about, you know, how it works. But I don't think it's enough to make the kind of the large groups of people that just like browse Reddit really dislike it. It might mess up some of the people who are kind of bigger content creators or moderators to kind of reevaluate how much of their volunteer time they're spending on Reddit. But I think if there's going to be, you know, whatever the next Reddit is, it's going to be, it's probably going to be markedly different. I think there's going to be a better hook than, we can say whatever we want, or this evil CEO doesn't work here, or have purse strings over how it's going to work. Because when it comes down to it, when a vote, if they are going to be as big as Reddit, they're going to need money, and that money is going to, depending on how that's, you know, driven in or built, is going to, you know, change how the site is run. I mean, that balance still has to be struck between profitability and open space and communication and content creation. So, still, it's an interesting thing, but I don't know. Right now, Reddit, for all intents and purposes, is still Reddit to me right now.
So. Still the front page of the internet.
And on that front page of the internet, I found a story about Colorado and their experiment with birth control. So I think it was for the last, was it 4 years or 3 years? I think it was 2010. Oh, no, that would be 5 years.
2009.
Come on, math. I can do this.
Well, they got the teenage birth rate to drop 40% between 2009 and 2013.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's why I remember 2013. All right. So Colorado made some changes to their healthcare law to try something out. And their thing was, ahead of the Affordable Care Act and things like that, they wanted to see what the impact was of giving free birth control, specifically, I think it was IUDs or implantable birth control rather than pills or things like that. And that just to see, like, would it actually affect unwanted pregnancies and abortions and things like that. And the answer is pretty much a qualified yeah.
I would say unqualified. You get a 40% drop.
No, that's unqualified.
Teen birth rates. Yeah, a 42% drop in abortions.
Yeah,
by taking human error out of the equation.
Right.
Of birth control.
Yeah. No, that's pretty unqualified. You're right. I think the thing that you know, the main thing that the argument is that It's going to make people more, you know, do quote unquote bad things.
if the teens get with each other, it makes the baby Jesus cry. That's the only argument I can think of against this.
Yeah. I mean the usual, I don't know. It comes into, like, what is it? The moral decline of teenagers. And I think it's interesting because you weigh the quote unquote moral decline versus the actual, like, cost,
real benefit.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think one of the other big thing that you want to do to upset like a conservative is you say that welfare is involved, or you know, or childcare or something like that. And I think you can prevent those things if there are not, you know, this kind of sudden influx of population. And so I think overall, the article mentions this, like, birth rates are declining among kind of teenagers. And I think it's, you know, that's a, you know, thanks to a bump in education more than anything else. But or not necessarily education, just people being able to get information, or the access to information, kind of becoming more widespread. But yeah, like giving people access to birth control if they actually want it, I think you know, obviates a lot of the problems and stuff associated with how you kind of comport yourself in the world when you're
meeting people. It helps us all.
Yeah, it's just a good thing. It's a thing. Birth control is a thing. Free birth control is a thing. Go Colorado and the nation.
Once again, Colorado leading the nation in something that we all should be doing anyways. I would even go as far as say this is more important than legalizing marijuana.
Yeah. No, I think so. I think it's one of those it's one of those social issues that really I think should not be that big of an issue. I think how we want people to act and how people act can be you know, very, very different. And controlling for how people act is like in actuality is probably a better way to deal with it than to just kind of sternly say no or restrict See how, access.
Well, that's worked out for the Palin family.
For those that aren't following that, she, Bristol Palin, am I right?
Yeah.
Who, you know,
is a strong advocate for abstinence-only education.
Yeah.
Is pregnant again.
Yeah, is pregnant again out of wedlock. Again.
Which is not something I would ever judge anyone for, except for the fact that that's her thing. She gets paid to talk about that. I will always call out hypocrisy.
Yeah. Yep. Hypocrisy is not a thing. So, moving from
lady parts to man parts.
Yeah, I guess. There's an interesting,
interesting. You say interesting, story. I say horrifying.
Yeah. So I was interested by the headline, which is scientists are creating a non-metallic robot, which in some ways is also horrifying because that means you can't detect them under metal detectors or affect them with crazy magnetic fields, which is what they're using this robot for. They're using this robot to work inside of an MRI, like a live MRI, which would normally throw metal across the room and things like that. And the whole the reason for doing that is that with a live MRI, you have more information, visually or electronically, however you want to process it about what's going on. And so normally the space inside of an MRI is already very cramped. So having surgeons in that space doesn't really work, especially surgeons using metal tools. The idea was to create a non-metallic robot that could be inside the MRI as well as the patient and then do work. And then the attending surgeons would be remotely available to deal with what's going on. And they would get live feeds from the MRI and from the robot itself and could control the robot to do stuff. The thing about this story that I think both you and I found horrifying was that it's specifically for prostate cancer, which... operating on prostates, that's a thing. Prostate cancer is unfortunately a thing and has to be dealt with. But if bedside manner were a judge of how to describe this article, they have none, because they were like, they're talking about, it's going to talk like this and it's going to do this and it's being used in cancer. And then they immediately drop, I forget what the line was, but it was like, and this robot will have access to the prostate through the, and they go completely graphic on like how it's going to get there. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want a robot anywhere near my, yeah.
No so. Robots in my butt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, you know, if it came down to it, I think I would want an operation, but I'd
let you go first.
I don't know if I'd want to be in this test group.
No. Never be the first at anything, except landing on the moon. Like, unless you're an explorer, don't be the first at something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was a little scary for that one, but I don't know. It's still in talks. It's still in testing phases. So
they should do lots of testing before they start unleashing that on people's prostates.
Yes, yes. So on from bad robots to good robots. There's a really interesting story about very large robots this week. So this
Jaegers
from tiny robots that fit in little tubes to big robots that are human controlled. And so
it's from robots that are inside humans to humans that are inside robots.
Take that, robots. And and these robots are going to fight each other. How can this not be on the podcast?
I don't know.
we have to thank Skylar for this one. He called us out on the Facebooks to talk about it. Thanks, Skylar, friend of the podcast. And the deal is both the U.S. and Japan, they're robot enthusiasts who've created kind of large, I think they're like 12 feet tall, human-powered robots, kind of humanoid things. And they, someone from the U.S. team offered a challenge to the Japan team, and they responded, "Yeah, let's do this." And so sometime, they don't really have a date or a place or parameters about how it's going to work, but supposedly we're going to have some robot fighting. And it's not like battle bots, like little robots rolling against each other in an arena. These are actual like human powered large robots.
And not shitty like that robot movie with Hugh Jackman.
Hopefully not.
That movie was terrible.
I didn't see it. I don't know.
I don't even remember what it was called. I just know I didn't like it.
No, it was something like,
oh, Real Steel.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say Big Steel, but yeah.
Well, I thought it was interesting that the U.S. team's robot is built with guns that shoot paintballs,
uh-huh,
and BBs.
Uh-huh.
And the Japanese team doesn't want to fight like that. They want hand-to-hand combat. They want a melee fight. So they're going to need to work that out.
Yeah. 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 I think the thing that is going to really have to save all of this is how good is the robot going to be at fighting from the ground after it falls over? Because I suspect that anything that is bipedal, anything that walks, is going to have a lot of trouble standing up when something bumps into it. Because they're probably not made for a lot of agility. So that'll be interesting. But
now I just want to watch Pacific Rim. Let's go do that. Let's end the podcast. I mean, actually, permanently for tonight, not like end the podcast.
I did want to do one plug out for a different robot thing. And I don't think this was Comic-Con news, although that is going on right now. It may have been Image Expo, which was just like a couple days ago. Image Comics is putting out a thing by Brian K. Vaughan, who wrote Why the Last Man and Saga, which is excellent if you want to read comics that are good and aren't superhero based. Both of those are great, but his current project is called We Stand on Guard for Thee, I think it may just be We Stand on Guard, and it's a line from the Canadian national anthem, O Canada. And the story is about a group of Canadian freedom fighters who are protecting Canada from a giant United States-based robot mecha thing.
American robots.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty great. I'm pretty excited for it.
We'll have to have a review of it once you've read it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So I think that's a pretty good spot to put a button on this show. I think this was pretty good, right, Brandon?
What else am I going to say? This was garbage. I regret everything. Just delete it. Erase it from the verse.
Right on. Well, in any case, I will talk to you next week, man.
Till next time, Alan.